So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 97, so close to 100. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about the mid-season premiere of Rebels. Spoiler warning, if you have not seen it, you may want to turn it off after the news before we get to our spotlight topic, because this is a doozy. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined this week with Evan from the JodoCast. Hey, Evan.
Hey, Mikey. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. Although, I will say, I'm a little sad to get into this news, that you know, the spotlight topic. But again, I don't want spoiler-free right now until we get to it.
Yeah.
But man, Rebels is just so good. And we also have Patreon Brack. How you doing, Brack?
I'm good tonight. Thank you.
Glad to have you on. So, if you want to get involved in our conversation, you guys can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast, or leave a comment on our Facebook page. You can also send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. And I think I've said this before, but I absolutely love Audible, and I love the fact that it actually works with Kindle too. So like, if you buy the book on Kindle and then you have like the audiobook too, it syncs it up. I'm like, I'm going to do this for my daughter if she gets older and just teach her to read Star Wars books this way. It's really cool. But, you know, technology. Wow. Anyway, I know, I'm amazed, right? Anyway, we've also launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include the Discord chat, recording studio, movie nights, After Dark episodes. I'm just trying to get people to line up so we could do some more of those things. I have a really cool After Dark episode planned and a gift to give to our Patreons. It's an old, old, old comic. It may or may not have to do with the new Solo movie coming out. So I'm excited about Han Solo and Indiana Jones. Have to wait and hear it on Patreon.
Oh, I think I know which one that is.
You know which one it is.
I think, man. So.
Crash land on on planet Earth.
Yep.
Anyway, definitely check that out on Patreon. If you can't afford to support us on Patreon, that is always okay. We do have merchandise available on our website. Visit resistancerio.net. Check out the t-shirts and button packs available there. I think it's time for the news, guys. Anyone excited about the news? I am. No?
Oh, yes. I am.
Yes.
I was really wishing that I could have given my two cents on the whole Solo trailer reaction right after the Super Bowl. But this trailer that dropped this morning, I guess?
The recut trailer that we're about to jump into?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah! So, Solo, A Star Wars Story has gotten a trailer recut. Which, I will tell you this, the most interesting thing about recuts of trailers is, I think in all sci-fi films, they have to be recut to the Beastie Boys, specifically Sabotage. I think this really started with the first Star Trek reboot
the third
film?
One, the third Star Trek, Beyond.
Was it the third one?
Yep.
Well, no. The Star Trek Beyond was when they did, but the first Star Trek actually used Sabotage, the Beastie Boys, in the film, and so everyone started recutting some of the stuff to Beastie Boys. But yeah, they actually used it in they recut it in the third one too. So obviously, Rogue One also got a recut too with Sabotage, which was really awesome. And now we have Solo, A Star Wars Story, Sabotage trailer recut. What did you guys think of this?
Crickets. I'll let Brett go.
I did not know this was a thing, and I am watching it right now. And I am 20 seconds in, and it is awesome.
I will say this. Like, it is actually very, very cool. Like, the music starts a little bit later than I would have expected, but it is one of those things. Like, it's exactly the type of thing that I would have expected for a Solo film. I do like that they didn't just like reuse the trailer and put the music to it, kind of like when we talked about the Solo, I'm Han Solo you know, music that was re-added to the solo trailer.
Oh goodness!
which I think was awesome. It made me just smile and laugh and everything with it. But this trailer makes it more exciting. Yeah, I think it's the song too. Like the Beastie Boys song is just high energy in general.
Song. Yeah,
it's a great song. It's high energy and everything. But I will say it makes Lando look that much more awesome. Of course, I have to talk about Lando because you know it's Lando.
Yeah.
But it does make the whole thing just look that much more exciting.
Yes, I am officially more hyped than I was a minute ago.
I will say one of my favorite parts is like the at the end after the solo title comes up and then they Beastie Boys gets to the yell part and you just have Lando like yelling about the the big old arms tentacle things. It's just it makes it that much better, like because it's like it matches up to the music that well. So if you haven't seen it, we'll link to it on our website. Check it out, but. You have to see it. I think every news site has written an article about it because it is taking the internet by storm. I loved it. So that is Solo Sabotage or recut set by to the Beastie Boys. Next bit of news. I'm excited about this. We've talked about it. We're like, well, I wonder when it's going to happen. And we now have an actual date. Star Wars The Last Jedi is coming home. And like the other films, both The Force Awakens and Rogue One, we have two different release dates. So you can get it on a digital release on March 13th. Now, it's via Movies Anywhere, which is actually really cool. If no one knows what Movies Anywhere is, you can buy it via Google Play Store, Amazon, iTunes, and it's going to sync up to all those. So if you get a deal with Amazon Prime or something like that, and you can buy it cheaper there, you can buy it. And then you can go ahead and load it up through iTunes on your iPhone or iPad or your Apple TV. And or if you have a Google Play, but you bought it through iTunes, you can then play it through your Google Chromecast with the Google Store. Because Movies Anywhere allows you to synchronize all your accounts with the movies, which is really cool. So I'm really excited that they are embracing the Movies Anywhere kind of framework to kind of let you be able to not be stuck into one type of device or anything. But that comes out March 13th for digital. And then, March 27th, which is more than a week, 2 weeks later, it finally comes out on disc, on Blu-ray, 4K, Blu-ray, and on demand. Which, I will tell you this, I think we were going to start talking about this, Evan. I have a gripe with that, because I love to have the physical copy. Mm-hmm. But man, I don't think I can wait 2 weeks to buy it. I don't know. Can either of you guys wait 2 weeks?
No.
I don't know, because I just saw it again just a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Talking about this.
Yeah, it's pretty fresh for me still. So, I don't know, because we get the digital one with buying the physical copy, and I don't have a 4K TV, otherwise I'd be buying that 4K Blu-ray, but buying just the regular Blu-ray gets me that, probably a plain old DVD. And a digital version. So it's kind of value versus immediacy. But I do want to say, I was doubting the date that we had talked about previously for about a week. And I was like, man, where did I get that date from? I don't know where I pulled that from. And I was right. So I'm just going to hang on to that for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I was right at All least right. one time.
You know what? You're right more than one time, I'm sure, Evan. But now, I will say this. So there's a lot of really cool features coming to this, and this might dictate when you decide to buy. So one of the features is Andy Serkis Live, One Night Only. Writer-director Rian Johnson presents two exclusive sequences from the movie featuring Andy Serkis riveting raw on performance before his digital makeover into Snoke. So when it says One Night Only, I don't know if that's actually going to be any of the live interactive type of things, because I know they've done that with other films. I don't know if you guys have any input on this. Like, it doesn't really give us much more, but when it says like Rian Johnson presents two exclusive sequences, I almost wonder if this is going to be, because Blu-ray has always had the ability to do like live internet kind of interactive stuff, and most Blu-rays don't really do it. I know, like, the Harry Potter ones, if you have, like, the newer Blu-rays from them, they have a, live screening, view it with other people watching the movie at the same time, and you can kind of join, like, chat rooms, stuff like that, and obviously with all the digital versions, there's ways to do that, so I'm wondering if this is going to be, like, a special feature that'll be something that you can always watch, but it's something that you can go ahead and like be, you know, be live with all the other people if it's going to be a specific night or something. What do you guys think of this? Like, does it? There's not really not that much information about it.
I mean, it seems like you're on the right track with it being some sort of interactive experience, but I don't know how they're going to do that if this is talking about something that has already happened. So I guess I don't have much thoughts on it, except that I hope it's not locked into viewing whatever it is that they're showing, because someone's going to at least capture it and put it on YouTube in any event.
Well, I feel like it probably, it's a sequence, like, you know, he presents two exclusive sequences. I'm sure these things are going to be added, like the sequences are going to be added to like the bonus features, at least for the digital version, which is why it's really funny. It's like there's even a note saying digital bonus offerings may vary by retailer, right? So like the actual discs are going to be different because you get access to different things. Like we saw with The Force Awakens, if you bought the Target version, which I did specifically to get the extra footage
with the garbage, there was like an extra box, the garbage case.
Yeah, the case was horrible. I ended up buying another copy, the 4K edition and the 3D version, just so I have a better case for The Force Awakens. I know, right? I bought it three times. That time I gave the digital code away. Obviously, because I had to use the digital code from the Target one to get the special bonus features there. So I had to use the digital code twice. Once I got it when I bought the digital. Disney, thank you for making me buy a single film three times.
That's a Lucasfilm tradition. Come on.
I know, right? But, you know, it's interesting because I feel like some of those things may be exclusive to, the digital release or something like that. So it almost makes me wonder if that, you know, presentation will happen before the actual Blu-ray version comes out. And it'll be a digital-only thing, because I feel like the digital-only will make it easier for fans to interact with. Specifically, at least I can speak to iTunes with the Apple TV, which I have set up at home. I know, like, as new extra features were added, they pop up automatically, and they're, you know, on the iTunes there. So it's kind of cool that, like, when the disc comes out, that's not all they have. Is as they add more special features and bonus features, they get added in. One thing I will say, I know if you buy it through iTunes, not only do you get it digital in HD, but they do free upgrades to 4K. So even if you don't have a 4K TV, when you buy it with your account, you can actually watch it in 4K once you get a 4K option. So that is kind of cool. But is there any of these bonus features stand out to you guys? I will say The Director and the Jedi is a feature length documentary about of it. So I think that's kind of cool. You know, documentary with Rian Johnson and his journey through the film. I would love to see if we get to see some of the photos he took with the analog camera on that in that documentary. I'm sure we'll see some of those. But is there anything that stands out that you guys want to see besides maybe, you know, deleted scenes?
I'm excited about the audio commentary.
That, yeah.
Do a lot of those anymore, and I really like them.
Yeah, audio commentaries are my favorite. We didn't get audio commentary until the 3D version for Force Awakens, if my memory serves me correctly. So yeah, Evan, any special features standing out to you that you're like, oh, I really want to?
I'm always a sucker for those feature length behind the scenes pieces. Mm-hmm. I am hoping that people do check out the special features, because in our circle we read all the articles that come out, and you know, when Rian Johnson explains something, you know, why he took a story bit in a certain direction, you know, it makes more sense. And then there's still people that are hung up on, that's not what Luke would do. And it's like, yeah, but think about it from this perspective. You know, we're privy to all these things that a lot of people aren't. And I really hope they take the time to watch things like Director and the Jedi and the commentary. The special effects portions and deleted scenes, those are all cool, but this movie is so much about just life and philosophy and hardship that I hope people pay attention to that part of it.
Yeah, I know, I'll agree with you on that. You know, I've come across many people who did not like The Last Jedi and say, oh, it was horrible. And, you know, I will say this, on my first view, and I think I said it, I didn't feel like it was my Luke, you know. You know, besides the fact that he had a beard, which I still am struggling with, I'll be honest with you. The EU is ingrained in my soul, very soul. You know, I grew up reading it.
Where no one ages.
But, exactly. Except the kids. It's all right. I'm okay with Luke being, you know, Mark Hamill from the 70s forever. But, you know, but it's one of those things where it took me on multiple viewings and kind of reflecting almost on the Legends of Luke Skywalker book to really kind of see that, like, hey, you know what? You're right. Like, I've built up Luke Skywalker to be, you know, one, he was my hero, or he still is, but, like, my hero, and he did all these great things, but he had help from everybody. So it's one of those things where, like, you know, if he was by himself, isolated, feeling bad, like, I could see him being this way. So I think it's really great, you know, when we have Rian Johnson explain to us on Twitter, like, certain things that tie things in. People, you know, you're right. If people see this, I think they'll be able to go like, oh, that makes sense. And I think it's the easiest way to say it is from a certain point of view, this is easily what could have happened. You know, there's lots of different stories and how things could have played out. But I really enjoyed Last Jedi overall. What do you guys think about going back through the, you know, the movie coming out on a home release and a physical copy, not just digital? What do you guys think of the different packagings from Best Buy and Target? I'm trying to see who else they have. I know the UK won't have all the different ones. That's a multi-screen edition. But yeah, what do you guys think of the packaging? I think it's really cool. Target's got this 40-page book. That looks pretty cool. I think they got a lot of flack from the packaging being bad last time, and it looks a little bit better this time.
I certainly hope the Target edition is better this time, because I love that configuration of the different poster styles. That art is amazing. And if there's a freaking book that comes with this, yes, that's the one that I'm buying.
Yeah, so Target exclusive Blu-ray includes a bonus feature called Meet the Porgs. Take a lighthearted look at the development of the lovable creatures. I don't know how much I'm going to love that featurette, but cool. But it also comes with a 40-page gallery book included inside. So it, you know, and the book, I look at seeing it open, it's got really cool art from, it looks like Cobalt Squadron there as they're going to go destroy the ship at the beginning. But on the flip side, like, I will say Best Buy's exclusive 4K Ultra HD Steelbook Edition looks cool. Like, it's this, I love the Steelbooks. They're great to display on, you know, on the shelf, and they have just the Blu-ray version too, Blu-ray, DVD, and digital. And I will say the inside of the Steelbook looks really cool. It's that, you know, picture of crate that we saw, like, when they first released it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the nice part about the Steelbooks from, what do you call it, from Best Buy, is they're all going to be the same. That's what the, you know, that's what the Rogue One was, that's what Force Awakens. So it's something, at least you can have three films on your shelf plus the, you know, standalones, and they all look the same, whereas I know with the Target edition, it's not going to look like the last Target edition. I don't know. Brack, do you have a preference? Any of these stand out to you?
I'm probably going to get the Target edition also because I want the book. And
see,
also because Target's closer than Best Buy. But
I agree with you. Target's closer to me, too.
But that is a nice-looking package that Best Buy's got.
Yeah. I will say, I'm wondering how Target edition is going to have this extra featurette. Because eventually, the featurette that Target had that was exclusive to them was released, you know, out to everyone. That's where the dancing scene of Rey and was it Poe and everyone came through. Like, that was from the Target exclusive. That wasn't on any of the other ones. So that was the behind the scenes footage there. So we'll see. But I think I'm going to go with Target myself, because I do think that looks pretty cool. Moving on to the next bit of news, we have received more screenshots, or more photos, I guess, of what the Disney resort is going to look like. And I'll say this, every time I see the resort pictures, like, it makes me get a little more excited. And I find it really weird. They're releasing all these shots, like, they're officially Disney releases through, like, small YouTube videos. But they're not YouTube videos. They're photos, but they move in the background to kind of show, like, what you're going to see. And this is the artwork, obviously. but they're releasing all these through like little videos, like first look, new image. But it's not like an image of all of them. It's just like a single image, and you have to go to a different video. What do you guys think of this? Like, just think about it. Like, I think the cabin looks pretty cool. Like, I don't know if I want to sleep on a bunk bed, but I'm kind of cool with that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's the kids' room.
you want your queen size bed to sleep
I'm too old for bunk beds.
I don't know, man. If you got to go on an actual Star Wars spaceship, I think I'd be okay jumping on a bunk bed. But you know, possibly for it. But yeah, but I will agree. Like, I do like that as you look out the viewports of the windows, they're all going to be digital screens that make you look like you're, you know, in space, living around with Star Wars stuff. So I think it's really cool. The rooms definitely look like, you know, what we've seen in the movies as a, you know, it's like a Star Wars cabin. I don't know. Evan, what is your take on this?
I am all about it. I am paying much more attention to it now than I was before because, you know, before we just had basically the sketch, the concept of just the entire exterior of it, not really any interior concept art. And now that they're releasing more of that and just, I don't know, it's becoming more real. It's getting closer each time that we hear something. So my hype is starting to increase a bit more. And as soon as there's, I mean, I know the date is in 2019, but as soon as tickets can be purchased, they will be purchased.
Oh yeah. I am ready to give them my money.
Oh no. I talked about it each time we talked about, you know, Secrets of the Empire and stuff. Like, the experiences that I know they're going to put in this park is going to be mind blowing. And, you know, I'm really excited for not just the theme park in both California and Florida, you know, Galaxy's Edge, but really this new resort that they're building in Florida, because it's going to be the first, from what I understand, it's going to be the first and only hotel you'd stay at that is not just on Disney property, but actually inside the park. Like, it is actually in the park. Like, you exit the doors into Galaxy's Edge. Like, you exit into the park. So that, I think, is just, like, a really cool kind of, like, concept. You know, again, I don't think it's going to be something that you would stay there for your entire, like, week stay. But I think it's something that you would, you know, do one or two days there, and then they would move you to another property. But I just am so excited to be able to say, you know, stay in Star Wars, if you will. Because the stuff from Galaxy's Edge just looks awesome. Speaking of Galaxy's Edge and in a galaxy far, far away, J.J. Abrams has finished the script for Episode 9. This is kind of early for it. Like, I was not expecting it to be done this quick. What do you guys think about this, it being done so soon before they start filming? Good, bad?
For me, I guess that's a good sign. Because that tells me that even though we've been hearing that with this trilogy, everyone is being allowed to sort of use their own voice when they're making their own films. Granted, now it's JJ 2, Rian Johnson 1, and not three different guys. But that tells me that, you know, there is a level of cohesiveness that vocal minority was sort of regaling against, with Last Jedi being so drastically different in tone and execution from Force Awakens. So the fact that JJ's got a script that has incorporated, you know, the things laid out in Last Jedi that were begun in Force Awakens tells me that, you know, there is a sense of cohesiveness, and we are going to get a solid film, and, you know, there is a plan. People are worrying that there's no plan. There is a plan. JJ's got it, and I'm more excited for 9 than I was for 8 for some strange reason.
I think I am too. You know, it was interesting. The information that the script has been complete is JJ was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, And basically, he revealed that he started writing the script from scratch after being brought back by Lucasfilm, which is something that we kind of knew he was going to start over. And he was writing with his with Chris Terrio, who did Argo, Batman vs. Superman, and Justice League. And it was one of those things where he started from scratch rather than using what they already had, which is good because we know Leia was supposed to take a front seat in Episode 9, but obviously with the passing of Carrie Fisher, things had to be reworked. So I think instead of trying to pigeonhole like something to fill, you know, make that story work, having him write from the beginning was probably a better choice. But he said it's a big deal that it's done because it's not a luxury he often has when he's working on a movie to have it finished this early on. I'm sure there'll be things where they'll go ahead and do some revisions and there'll be script doctoring for dialogue and stuff. But the film is not slated to start filming until July. Right now, we're just, you know, February, July. That's a long time away. And the script is done. Like, I would be almost worried about, like, script leaks and stuff like that. Now, I know Rian Johnson talked about having, like, writing it on a MacBook Air that had the Wi-Fi card disabled and, like, never connected to the internet, no updates and stuff like that. So it was a gap computer. So the only way that, like, it would get out is if someone stole the laptop. I'm not telling anyone to steal J.J. Abrams' laptop or anything like that. I'm just being honest. I'm not saying that. But, like, I can't imagine, like,
that should be a sequel to
Fanboys. Right? So we're going to steal J.J.'s laptop to know how it ends. But, yeah, it's you know, I can't imagine, you know, the script. You know, I'm sure a script won't leak because we've never had a leak or anything, but with it being done this soon, I feel like there's going to be a lull between, like, people are going to get the script, people are going to read. Like, I feel like this is, you know, dangerous territory if you don't want to be spoiled that much. I don't know. I'm excited that it's done, though, because, like you said, I feel like there is at least some cohesiveness with the story because it was just, I feel like it just maybe just poured out of him and it just is what he wanted to tell. Any other thoughts on it being done script wise? All right. No? So, we also have new information about a trademark register called Star Wars Resistance. Now, at first glance, this sounds like it could be a mobile game or something like that, because Lucasfilm registers all sorts of trademarks all the time. But Star Wars Resistance got some additional registration, if you will. So it's been registered for games, gymnastics and sporting articles, handheld units, electronic games with external display, you know, all these things, clothing, footwear, headwear, paper articles, cardboard, recording transmission, video game software. So it's got the Star Wars Resistance has a trademark for much more than what you would get for like a mobile game, like Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes or the new one that's coming out. But this could easily be the new show that they're working on. We know they're working on at least one live action show and possibly one more animation show simultaneously. And what better place than to release a Star Wars live action show taking place in the post-original trilogy and in the era of the new trilogy. And Resistance would not be far off if you follow a different kind of person who is working for the Resistance. What do you guys think about this? What could it be?
Any thoughts from Brett? Because I certainly have thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I have some ideas. Like, I think would be another animated series, sort of like set in like the whatever this little piece of time between Last Jedi and whatever Episode 9 ends up being called. I think, depending on the time skip, that there will be a lot of stuff to work with there.
Yeah, that would actually make a lot of sense, because there's definitely going to be some type of time skip between 8 and 9, whereas between 7 and 8, there was no time skip, from Luke getting the lightsaber and tossing it off the cliff. Evan, what are your thoughts on this, Star Wars Resistance?
I was, even before I saw this headline, in fact, I hadn't really even heard anything about this until I saw your show notes, but I had just been thinking about, this is the last season of Rebels, and we know that there have been looking at a new animated series, just like Brack said, and I was really, really hoping that the next animated series would be either one of two things, either a classic Star Wars, Luke, Han, and Leia adventures, because we can never have too many of those, but I would love, I would absolutely die if we got an animated series starring the Resistance folks. So Poe and Snap and Jessica Pava and all the rest of those people that we know are still alive at this point. And even if they did a leading up to TFA series, then we'd see more of Cobalt Squadron. And I don't know if the wing of A-Wings was necessarily a part of that group or not, but those were cool folks in TLJ. So there's so much to mine in that pre-TFA period. But yeah, somewhere in between 8 and 9 would be awesome all as well. I think that's the area that Disney should be shooting for now, more than classic and more than prequel. I think Rebels, its end, will kind of be the ceremonial end of the prequel era. At least to me, it will be. So, yeah, give me some new trilogy animated series, and I'll give them everything. I will give them all of my money. I'll just link my bank account to Lucasfilm.
Okay, now I'll tell you this. So I'm gonna give you what my thoughts are on this. So I think this is going to be an animated show, because, you know, it makes sense, especially if you're going to keep it Resistance, you know, trying to get actors to replace, you know, Daisy, John, or even just have them come on for, like, cameos, like a live action. I think this would be a too much taking on for this as a weekly TV show.
Agreed.
But as an animated show, like, because we've seen, Forces of Destiny, like Daisy's jumped on that and stuff like that. But I think this would be an awesome show to take place between Bloodlines, where basically as soon as Leia is outed from the Senate and kind of starts to form the Resistance, to the beginning of The Force Awakens, because then that gives you plenty of time. We've had Leia as an animated character before in Rebels. There's lots of talented voice actresses that would, I'm sure, be able to fill that role, because we've had others do it already. But we would then get things like more about Cobalt Squadron, more about where, you know, maybe Hera is involved. We don't know where Hera is, because we know she survived. You know, we know she survived, you know, the Battle of Endor, because we saw her on one of the many Forces of Destinies there. We know Hera and Chopper. We don't know the fate of everyone else, but we know Hera and Chopper. So where is she in all the post-Empire? Is she someone that Leia taps? Because Leia knows Hera. Where is, you know, like, I would love to see this. Take a little bit more about Amelyn Holdo. You know, we learned about Holdo not only in The Last Jedi, but we learned about her in the Leia book. You know, see her kind of, you know, join up with Leia to kind of stand for what, you know, they believe is right. I would love to see, you know, all the other characters that have been brought to the forefront in either The Last Jedi or Force Awakens, and just kind of see how they get there. You know, we learned about Rose and Paige in Cobalt Squadron, but they have other stories, like what they've done on their own, you know, what missions they've taken. Like, it would be so easy for Resistance to kind of explore that time period leading up to it, because it's after Return of the Jedi, before The Force Awakens. You know, when you think about, you know, Clone Wars, we had, you know, all the, you know, we had so many episodes, 6 seasons, that take place between 3 years of time. You know, this would be like a 10-year time, you know, that builds up, you know, the First Order building up. We can see the little skirmishes that the Resistance has, you know, talking about freedom and stuff like that. So I feel like this would be the perfect kind of, like, time period for them to be able to do, you know, to tell plenty of stories and go on with at least 4 to, you know, more, you know, seasons with it easily. Before it hits, you know, where The Force Awakens takes us, and then, you know, they go do something else. But I think that's where it should be, because it allows them to explore character developments that they didn't have in the films which is what, like, if you think about Obi-Wan Kenobi or Anakin Skywalker, to me, when I think of Anakin Skywalker as the Republic general, the hero of the Republic, I think of the animated Clone Wars Anakin Skywalker, not Hayden Christensen, even though Hayden is Anakin Skywalker from the films. I don't know about you guys. Do you guys have similar opinions about Anakin Skywalker or anything like this?
Same.
Yep, I'm with you.
That's right where my mind goes when I think of Anakin now.
Yeah, so I feel like by focusing on like the time before The Force Awakens, it allows them to develop. Well, think about like Holdo. When we saw The Force Awakens, or The Last Jedi, I know a lot of people were like, who is this person? Like, I knew a little bit about Holdo from the Leia book, so I kind of knew that she knew Leia for a long time, and I can see why she's an admiral, but you didn't really know that much more. Like, there was not, you kind of knew her personality. If you had read the book, you understand why her hair was purple. You know, she didn't do any type of aerobatic tricks with, like, whatever she meditates with. So it's one of those things where I think this would be the perfect time period for it. But that's just my two cents. Anyone at Lucasfilm, if you listen to me.
I agree. That's brilliant, I think. I was thinking not too long ago, actually, I was thinking about Bloodline and how much I liked it. And how a lot of those characters are really cool, but very few, or I don't think even any of them really have been revisited to great extent.
No, not much at all.
Since then.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think, and again, this is me being, you know, the person who like have to look at the big picture, take a step back, you know, business side of Disney. If they do this series, you know, this is going to be in that same time period. We know Empire's Edge at the theme parks takes place when the First Order is starting to come up. We don't know if it's post Force Awakens, before, like, because, you know, because it's going to take place. We have the Millennium Falcon as a ride. So, obviously, it can't be after, you know, if Han is going to be there at all. We don't know. And they're obviously doing stuff. So, it would be interesting to put it in this area where, like, all the characters would be alive. You know, at least the Galaxy's Edge theme park. So, if this, you know, Resistance is before Force Awakens, you have all the major heroes still alive. And the theme park can be tied directly into it. Like, heck, Galaxy's Edge can even be a planet that they visit in this Resistance thing. And it just, you know, ties it all together.
Just as long as the resort is not in the Hosnian system. That would be a bad ride.
All the lights turn off. Boom. Anyway, one last bit of news before we get into our spotlight topic. We do have The Last Jedi visual effects breakdown. ILM has released a VFX breakdown, which is going to be part of the DVD, but also is was actually up for what they did for Oscar nomination. I'm always a huge fan of this just because of my film background. We also have had people from ILM on the show, so I love seeing these types of visual breakdowns. I will say one of my favorite scenes in this breakdown video they released is the A-Wing. Seeing how it's on like a pivot, like actually the whole ship is made and it's flying around on the screen, man, what I wouldn't give to just like sit in that. Even if it, like, you know, it reminds me almost of like the coin machines, like of the rocket ship when you're a little kid,
like in front of the adult store.
In front of the grocery store, but it's like the adult version. Like, it's a full size A-Wing with the cockpit and everything. Like, and it, you can see it's just kind of moving around like left and right, up and down, like it's, you know, flying through space. But the VFX breakdown makes me just like that excited. I'm like, man, I would give almost anything to like sit in that thing. Even if it's not an X-Wing, I'll still take the A-Wing. What'd you guys think about the breakdown?
That's very cool. It's, you know, it's always interesting to see how they make the final product. You know, it all looks so easy at the end. So smooth and perfect. It's nice to see the work that goes into it.
Yeah, a lot of little pieces put together.
Yeah,
I do love that they show like the different plates and things to make. How many little elements go into like even just the explosion and pose? Pose X-wing. Like, I like how they show like all the little flares and everything pieced together. Pose X-wing all cut out. The 3D model of the hangar and everything, and it's just awesome. So if you like any of that video stuff, definitely check out the visual effects breakdown. Obviously, Last Jedi was nominated for an Oscar for that. Okay, if you have not seen the mid-season premiere of Star Wars Rebels, I would encourage you to turn it off now. because it is time for us. Sorry, Brack. I know you haven't seen it.
Oh yeah, bye-bye. I've been on a little hiatus, electronic hiatus. So
go watch it right now.
I need to.
Go watch it right now, and we're gonna say goodbye because we're gonna get into our spotlight topic. Because there's two episodes of our mid-season premiere, episode Jedi Knight and Doom, and boy, are these amazing!
All right, you guys have fun, and thanks for having me on.
All right, see ya, Brack. Thanks for joining us. Okay, so spotlight topic: Jedi Knight, the first episode that starts our mid-season premiere. All right, before we dive into it, because I know I broke some of these notes down, Evan. Wow, what do you think of this episode?
Man, okay, so emotional reaction first.
Okay,
we're in spoiler time, so I knew it was coming because we'd been talking about it for months. We kind of had a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then the internet did spoil it for me before I got a chance to see it, which today's Thursday. I watched three episodes in a row last night, Wednesday, so Rebel Assault and Jedi Knight and Doom. All together. So, totally knew what was going to happen, basically. I mean, you know, the big thing.
You didn't know. Well, you could say it. This is post-spoiler. You knew Kanan was going to die.
Yes. Knew, okay.
But you didn't know how. Kanan
was going to die. The Twitter had basically spoiled most of it for me. Like, I knew kind of the circumstance, but everything, all the build-up to it. No one spilled like the whole episode, just the scene where he dies. So it was an hour for me. It was just an hour of like, I know it's coming. And then we got there.
Boom.
And
boom. Actually, boom.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I could not stop crying. I cried in Last Jedi. I cried in Revenge of the Sith, but this, I did not see this coming as far as the gigantic emotional just punch to the face, just one after another. Oh my gosh.
So I'll tell you this, my emotional response is, I don't remember if I cried. I'll be honest with you. I watched it. I was not spoiled. I knew it was coming or something had to happen, but I didn't think it was going to happen on the first episode back.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be honest with you, I didn't think it was going to be, especially because, like, the way the lead up is. Like, he's like, you know, he's like, I can't do it. You need a lead. You know, the reunited, everything. Like, it just is like he's full on, like, turning, like, you know, BA, like, full on, like, cut the hair, shave. He looks like, so, like, you know, what I would say is, like, someone who looks hard, and he's ready to go battle and fight and do this thing, and then all of a sudden, like, oh my gosh, like, the emotion that is laced into it between Hera and him, like, it really is something I did not expect on the first episode, and unfortunately for me, like, I didn't get to watch both episodes back to back. Problem with having a baby who doesn't sleep completely through the night. She sleeps mostly through the night, but not all the way through the night. So, you know, we get to watch it after she goes to bed. And after the first episode, she wakes up and we're like, all right, well, I got to work in the morning at 7 a.m. So I guess it's not time to put her back down and then watch the next one. So we stopped. But I remember after that first episode, like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, taking a moment to breathe and be like, I couldn't wait to get to the next episode to see how, like, because I'm emotionally dealing with the loss of Kanan, right? And I wanted to see how my, you know, the characters get through it.
Mm-hmm.
But even here, just while we're recording, you know, we have Patreons talking about they only watched it and they felt like they were mourning the whole day. You know, they cried their way through the second episode, like, yeah. Even just the start of the second episode without getting into it, like, the title credits of it, I'm just like, oh man, yeah. Like it's all white and like there's the dust kind of floating through it. And you're just like it's definitely something like mourning, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I'm blown away. Anyway, let's get into the breakdown of Jedi Knight, the first episode of our mid-season premiere of Rebels. So just a recap of where we're at with this first episode of our mid-season premiere, Jedi Knight. Hera is still captured. So at the end of the mid-season finale, Hera was captured by Thrawn. And you know, Price and the Empire, and they had to. They knew they were going to go. You knew the beginning was going to go a rescue mission for her to get her back because Hera doesn't stay captured. But it's really interesting as soon as we open up because she's being tortured by Governor Price, Yolinda Price. What did you think about that scene in general? Just seeing Price's interaction with Hera and just her glee of torturing her.
Yeah, I kept having flashbacks to the Thrawn novel.
That's I want to be honest with you. I invited you on the show because I knew me and you had talked about the Thrawn novel at an extent, both on this show and I think on your show too. But I'll tell you this. Price is such an interesting character from the Thrawn novel that it made me like her more in Rebels. Not as a, like her as a person or anything like that,
sure.
But as a character, as a villain, I like her more. And this makes her just that much more cruel in my way, because I'm thinking about how she raised up through the ranks, what she did to become governor of Lothal, her ties to Thrawn and everything, and just seeing Hera being tortured and her glee at torturing her, and then Thrawn coming in, he's like, what have you learned? He's like, oh, I haven't even started to question her. Just purely torturing for the sake of torture.
Yeah, that was kind of that's a new thing that we don't see too terribly often from Imperials. Usually it's like, oh, it's all in the line of work. And she was like, nope, this is just me having fun. Yep.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see Price that way. Obviously, Price plays a very big part in this episode of what we were just talking about, and we'll get to that in a second. The other thing I really enjoyed was I really liked that Tarkin made a guest appearance.
That whole conversation was amazing.
Yeah, that whole conversation was so amazing. It was about Krennic and Tarkin. And just everything. So Tarkin calls Thrawn and tells him about Krennic's Stardust project, which we know is Stardust is the Death Star, and how for Thrawn to get more funding for his TIE Defenders, which can I tell you how much I love that TIE Defenders have made it into canon from the TIE Fighter game. I think it was like, whatever year that came out, the TIE Fighter simulator game. TIE Defenders were one of my favorite
94,
ships.
94, I think.
94 or 95. I wanted to say 95 at first, so it might be 94. But I am so happy that the TIE Defenders are there. But Tarkin calls Thrawn. And Thrawn has to leave. And this is really nice because we know Thrawn has a personal relationship with the Emperor. And so he says, I need to go speak to the Emperor. And he leaves to Coruscant. So this whole conversation ties Rogue One, Krennic, the Death Troopers that we've seen on the show, Thrawn novel, everything. Like, this also opens up the way for the Emperor to be in the back half of the season that we know is going to be here somewhere. So that conversation is just huge, and I loved it. But it was just one of those things that, like, it really set up Price to be the main villain because Thrawn had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So any comments on that conversation, Evan?
It didn't feel at all forced. It didn't feel like, ooh, how can we squeeze this in? It was just like, oh my, that's what's going on here. It didn't seem like just a callback for the sake of a callback. It was really good. It was a really nicely done scene.
Yeah, and I also like that at this point in time, Tarkin is now Grand Moff Tarkin, whereas before we've heard him as just referred to as Moff Tarkin. So between the beginning of Rebels and now, he's been promoted to Grand Moff Tarkin.
Because I could have sworn, because it left an impression on me that when Thrawn signed off on their conversation right before he killed the connection, I could have sworn he just said Moff Tarkin. Maybe he said Grand earlier and I just missed it. But on the sign off, I thought he specifically just said Moff Tarkin. And I was like, shouldn't you be calling him Grand Moff?
I thought he had said Grand Moff. Maybe I have two people saying they said Moff, not Grand Moff. Maybe I am completely wrong. I could very well be, but I remember maybe I'm thinking of it wrong. Again, I do a lot of these notes from memory, so I could be wrong, but I thought he had said Grand Moff. But regardless, at some point in time, we know that Tarkin takes himself and becomes Grand Moff, which I guess if you discount some of the EU, but apparently it's a self-proclaimed title that he has given himself. But regardless, he is Moff at some point in time. But I do like that the conversation there. Now, Hera is still captured. We talked about Price. What about that truth serum from the interrogation droid? Like, we've seen that interrogation droid in A New Hope. Vader uses it on Leia. It was more sinister to me in this than I think it was in A New Hope. I don't know. What was your opinions of this interrogation droid and the truth serum?
I think we had very different takes on it, because I was always kind of, you know, as a little kid, scared of that thing in New Hope. Like, and then
I was scared of it too.
They close the door and they're just walking away. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's happening in there? They don't show us anything, which is just really good editing. But here, you know, the camera pans away for 1 second, and we know that Hera's getting like stuck with a needle. We don't see it, so it's like, where did it poke her that we couldn't see it? Just like in her eyeball or what? But then after that, it was like pure comedy. I thought it was my favorite thing from the whole episode, that she's just kind of like acting kind of drunk through the whole rest of it. All her lines are pure gold, and I bet Vanessa Marshall had the time of her life doing those lines.
You know, I will say the aftermath of it was wonderful, but the leading up to it, seeing the needle sticking out, like, to me, it was sinister. I think it's because, like you said, you know, as a kid, seeing A New Hope and the interrogation droid, I was scared, you know, out of my mind about that thing. Like, that sound that it makes, like, it's ingrained in my memory. And seeing it and hearing it in this, I was worried about it. But I think the fact that I got to see more of it, whereas, like, in A New Hope, you only see, like, part of it and the needle kind of sticking out. You don't see it, the whole thing kind of floating like you do in this. For me, it seemed like it was more menacing, but maybe that's just because me pulling up my, you know, childhood memories with it. But yes, I agree. Afterwards, the truth serum in, and her just being truthful and just what happens after that is great. And that's actually leads us to Kanan and Ezra. So Kanan has Ezra plan the mission because he admits to Ezra his feelings for Hera. And that's why he can't plan or lead it, because he's going to make a mistake based on his emotional feelings for Hera, which I think everyone knew. Like, Hera and Kanan, you know, it's like Han and Leia from, you know, Empire Strikes Back, I love you, I know, type thing. Like, it's there, but it's not there. You know what I mean?
I guess I always assumed that it already was a thing and that they were just being coy with the audience about it, not that it wasn't a thing, like an official thing yet. I was just always kind of confused by the writing on the relationship, because I thought it was already, like, you know, assumed that, yep, they're together.
Yeah, I could see how I would assume they were together. But yeah, I do find that it's interesting that he makes the obvious appointment, you know, point to say that he can't do it because of this. He then goes on to kind of meditate, and he cuts his hair and shaves, which it's really interesting. When you see him, the cut hair and shave, he matches the description. He matches the description of what he was described as when he, in the was it A New Dawn novel. Like, I actually went and looked it up to see, that's, but yeah, one. It's definitely, yeah, it's the New Dawn novel description with the short hair and the clean shaven, you know, someone who doesn't look like a minor, which is where Hera finds him originally at.
And I loved that scene. It's obvious to anyone who follows the history of Star Wars, and Filoni points it out in the recon episode also, that it's very, very, very much a callback to samurai scenes. Especially the one that it evoked for me was a little different in tone, but at the beginning of Seven Samurai, when the head samurai cuts off his hair and like prepares himself for a conflict. It was, yep, it's like, we get it. And then for me, this episode, everything about this episode kind of was like an episode of The Walking Dead, where it's like, oh, he's having this big emotional revelation, like he's making emotional strides and changing himself, and he's going to be better, because that's when they die.
Oh, yeah, that's when they die.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kanan. Anyway, so, plan goes fairly smoothly up until the end, you know, Ezra it has like, interesting does. Idea. It goes for it. You know, and then Rook is the one who kind of fights Kanan, makes him and Hera change their plans. Kanan loses his lightsaber. And, you know, I instantly thought back to Attack of the Clones when Anakin gets scolded by Obi-Wan about losing his lightsaber. This will be the death of you. You know, I don't know if you caught that in my mind. I kind of laughed a little bit because after the fact when I thought about it. But yeah, Kanan lost his lightsaber. And, you know, obviously the Empire has it as a trophy, if you will. Kanan and Hera escape via the gliders that they made, which is awesome. And they have to crash. They don't quite make it away completely. Or at least, according to Hera, a very exciting landing because she doesn't have any crash landings. And they're kind of forced to escape on foot. And, of course, they go to the fuel depot, which is in front of them, which is the highest spot for them to be on. So that way, Sabine and... you know, Sabine and Ezra can pick them up, which I'll say Sabine and Ezra took a pretty backseat role to this entire episode, which is okay with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is really interesting. Like, I think at any other time in the show, the idea of them going to the fuel depot, it actually probably would have been the safest thing for them to do. Because normally you wouldn't think that the Empire would destroy their own resources to stop them. But at this point, the amount of pent-up rage against the Rebels versus, you know, the Empire. The Empire is fed up with their meddling. They've been doing it for too long. And even in this, you have Price in the AT-AT telling them to fire. And the, you know, the AT-AT driver says, ma'am, on our fuel depot, like... are you sure? But that's our stuff. Like, and she just says, don't disobey me and fire it. But yeah, like, what did you think about just that? Like the idea of the Empire destroying their own resources at this point. Like, have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, I thought about it a little bit last night, and I just thought that deliciously evil as she turned out to be in these episodes, she also comes off kind of dumb that she does something so stupid and then later tries to cover it up.
And with a parade.
Yeah, just like, what? That's, no. Who taught you that was a good idea? And furthermore, she is a governor, and as far as I'm aware, politicians, aside from Moffs, don't really have any military clout. They certainly have a lot of political sway, but if I had a politician saying, hey, shoot that thing that you know for a fact that we need, it's like, no, I'm not going to listen to you. The pilot clearly knew, like, this is not a good idea.
But they did it anyway.
It was
Price's orders to have the AT-AT to fire on the fuel depot that Kanan and Hera are standing on, waiting to be picked up to destroy them. Like, here's the thing, is like, they're literally standing on an explosive. And...
which is kind of dumb,
Yeah, I know, I agree. But I will say this, I do like the way the visuals were for this scene. This is the first time I can recall any of the animated shows, I think, have like a slow-mo moment. Because you could tell time slowed down, like even the ship wasn't moving out of the way as fast. Like, everything slowed down in this moment to really show what was happening, which I'm happy they did. And it wasn't like a quick action thing and he was gone. It put emphasis on Kanan's sacrifice. But it was one of those things where Kanan uses the Force to hold back the explosion, pushed Hera back to, you know, the gunship that Ezra and Sabine stole. And he's holding back this explosion and uses the Force not only to push the explosion away as far as it can, but also push their ship away. And then he lets it take him. Like, he becomes one with the Force. You know, he accepted it. And he's gone. And that's it. What do you think about that? Just like, I think it's a very fitting end for Kanan. But he let go. And right before this, though, like before they got picked up, you know, Hera still being loopy, she admitted to him that I love you. Like, this was like the ultimate, like, oh, cool, two lovers are finally admitting it to each other. He even made a joke about it being the truth serum. She's like, no, it's all me. It's taking me so long to say it. And then, you know, like being ripped apart. I think that's what got me so emotional about it. Sorry, I'm like rambling a little bit here.
Oh,
but what
no,
do you think, Evan?
I mean, that's when someone dies, or that's like the appropriate time to do it, is at death's door. I mean, as far as story arcs go, like, that's it was a little bit of a disappointment because it was kind of obvious. It's like, okay, they've gotten this far, she just said it, and now he's gonna die. Like,
I know, it was, yeah, like the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, but
it was,
I thought that the way he went out was great. And, you know, we can always think of scenarios of like, well, why didn't he do this? And I certainly all the time myself. But I thought that how he went out was very, very much in tune with Luke in TLJ and even Obi-Wan in New Hope. I thought it was along those same lines. I don't want to say blaze of glory, because it wouldn't have been glorious except for the fact that he was at peace with his role in everything and the fact that he was saving lives
moment. It was acceptance. You know, it's like, you know, you said it exactly. It's like Obi-Wan allowing Vader to strike him down. It's like, you know, Luke using astral projection, you know, force projection to have First Order attack and focus on him while the Resistance escapes. You know, he says that the Jedi are reborn, the Resistance starts anew. And that's it. Like, you know, he is stopping he's saving the ones he loves, protecting them so they can go on and continue to fight the fight that needs to be fought. So I'm a fan of how he went out. I'm a little sad, but it is, I would say, among the Jedi deaths, unlike someone like Mace Windu who got flung out the window and stuff like that, like, this right here is one of those that are like, it's one that's an Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's a Luke Skywalker. It's a strong end to a character that we've grown accustomed to for 4 years, which I think is good. And that's how the episode ends, leading us into the next episode called Doom, which we know, and I know you've read the comics, Evan, the Caleb Doom ones, the Kanan comics,
uh-huh,
when we learn about
the
Caleb Doom.
The Last Padawan.
Yep. So I've read the comics too, but it's obviously titled that, so I was hoping we'd get a little bit more backstory or something, especially since we just had the passing of Kanan. But the episode is really an interesting episode for me, because it really is, you know, we talked about emotional response to it, like, we all kind of were like shocked, but not so shocked, but we're kind of mourning through Kanan's loss in the next episode. And this next episode was exactly that, you know, and it opened up showing the Star Wars Rebel logo. It was a black and white, mostly white with a black outline, almost like a pencil sketch with what looked almost like snow falling, like title card, and it was very different than what we've seen in any of the, you know, Rebels.
Mm-hmm. No music,
you know, title cards. Yep, no music. It was silence, like a moment of silence for Kanan, if you will. Whereas we've seen the yellow, we've seen the red before. Like in The Last Jedi, we had the title being red instead of yellow. We had the Maul episodes of Clone Wars be red and stuff like that. And this one was white. You know, it was definitely a very different tone, even from the title card. And each character, or each of our main characters, mourned the loss of Kanan in a very different way. Starting with Hera, I think hers was the most interesting to me. She kind of almost, you know, turned into herself, mourning the loss and trying to figure out what to do next. And, you know, you put the notes in, Evan, but yeah, she ended up, you know, one of the last things Kanan did was recover her Kalakori, which was a nice throwback to the introduction of Thrawn in season 3, when he took the Kalakori from, you know, her father. And she tried to steal it back, but was unsuccessful. You know, the fact that she got such an important piece of herself, of her family history, back, but it took her losing another big piece of herself with the loss of Kanan. So it was really interesting to see her just kind of mourn Kanan with Chopper there, and eventually adding that piece of Kalakori to it. I think it was very fitting. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on Hera's kind of post-Kanan response in that episode?
I thought it was very realistic that she didn't just go one extreme direction or the other. She wasn't just, well, that sucked, I'm going to go kill all the bad guys. And she didn't just stay stuck in her sorrow. She was mourning. She went through what she had to by herself and with Chopper emotionally. She reached a point at which she got up and was ready to face things again. So it felt of like a very real, natural piece of writing for her.
Yeah. In our chat here, they've mentioned that they like that the Kalakori came back because it was a great way to round out Kanan and Hera's story, which I think it really is. Like, you know, the Kalakori we saw was earlier on, like I said, in season 3, and it was a way for Hera to add Kanan to her family. Obviously, he's no longer there with her, but she added a piece to the Kalakori that was in remembrance of Kanan that, you know, at the very end of the episode, she tells Chopper that he'll always be with me here.
Which we have to, Kalakori, so. We always have to give a shout out to Kalakori Village in SWTOR.
Yep, Kalakori Village right there. If you start a new Jedi Knight or Jedi Consular,
right,
you get to it by level 5, I think. It's super early on, within 15 minutes. Kalakori Village from Star Wars The Old Republic. Ezra is probably one of the more interesting ones, the way he responded. He withdraws into himself. You know, per Rebels Recon, you know, he kind of has this, I guess we say, a force vision with the Lothal Wolves, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, Filoni says he withdraws into himself and he kind of feels sorry for himself, which I would make sense. Like, you know, here's the thing is, like, his master, his mentor, you know, he's been on the streets alone for years, you know, since his parents were taken. And Kanan becomes like a father figure for him. You know, it's his mentor and he's gone, which, you know, rightfully so, that he doesn't know what to do. He feels lost. But, you know, as he kind of withdraws into himself, someone who has the ability to tap into the Force, you know, he gets stalked by Loth Wolves, which, again, I still don't know if the Loth Wolves are actually there on planet or if they're Force manifestations, mainly because they haven't been seen for thousands of years, and all of a sudden they're, like, everywhere the Rebels are, specifically with Kanan and Ezra. And then, of course, there's this giant Loth Wolf that's bigger than all the others that appears to him and identifies himself as Doom, which we know Kanan's real name is Caleb Doom, which is his name. And he's even mentioned in, what, 2 episodes before that when they were saved by the Loth Wolves, that when they say Doom, that he's like, that's me. Like, so he even mentioned it in the show, so it's not like a fan connection tying it together. But identifies himself as Doom, and he's presented with a rock paper. I don't know if it's rock paper scissors, but it's definitely.
It's not. But that's just what we were joking about. Our first thoughts over in the JotoCast Discord.
Yeah, it's definitely. There's three symbols of hand, which is, you know, it is a fist. Then there's something else. I don't remember what it is. And then it's a, you know, it's another hand.
It's a fist. It's a open hand, fingers spread. And then I think it's open palm, fingers together. If I'm not too mistaken, I could have switched up the second two. But those are the hand symbols.
The hand symbols. I'm sure, and it has something to do with the Jedi Temple on Lothal, which is great. I'm excited to be able to see what it is, but it is definitely something that we're going to get more about. And the writing around it looks like what we saw in the trailer of the temple, where we had like the Yoda character and the brother and the sister that we saw from Clone Wars. So there's definitely going to be some connection there. I don't know what the hands mean yet. Maybe it is a game of rock, paper, scissors, but it's definitely something. But that rock is the most interesting thing, is as he has this, force vision, the rock presented itself as a tablet, and he says, "I know what to do is our next step." Like, he brings it to Hera, Sabine, and Zeb, like, on what to do next. Like, this is the next step to move us on, is to go to the Jedi Temple on Lothal. What they're going to do, we don't know, but I am so excited for the next episodes. And then, of course,
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, aren't we getting 2-in-1 night again next week?
Yeah, we are getting 2-in-1. They just want to burn through Rebels and say the series is over. But yes, we are getting 2-in-1 night next week.
Too fast.
I know, right?
Too fast.
I know. Well, the first part of the season went by so quick. And then, of course, Sabine and Zeb. And I'll say this. Sabine and Zeb's reaction, not surprising. Also not what I really wanted. I was kind of disappointed in general, just because it was a pretty, like, it felt almost cliche. Their plan was retaliation. They wanted to make the Empire pay. And, like, I get it. Like, they ended up capturing Rook, which is great. They captured Rook, they spray painted him, it was all fun. It just seemed like it was almost a waste of time. Like, it was something expected. Now, I will say, the nice part about this is it did let them see the most important thing, is that when they did this, the retaliation, and they were able to tap into the Imperial network, Zeb recognized that the towers weren't making smoke anymore. So the reaction is, like I said, okay, but the fact that what they ended up doing, and kind of learning that with Kanan's death, he completed the original mission that Hera and the squadron fighters and everyone that the rebels were planning to do, to shut down the production of the TIE Defender. Well, they didn't complete it, but Price did, by destroying the fuel depot. There's no more fuel to actually manufacture these TIE Defenders, which we do know Thrawn is not above, the intelligence level of being impressed with Price's parade and destruction of the Jedi. But he also realizes that, guess what? You stop production, completely stop production of this TIE Defender, which is what the whole point of him leaving planet to go ahead and talk to the Emperor about ramping up production, and now it's been brought to a complete standstill. So technically, with the death of Kanan, he completed Hera's mission for him, or for her. So I do like Sabine's story, at least for that revelation. But other than that, I'm like, meh. Although the Rook stuff being spray painted was kind of fun.
I thought the fight was pretty great. Oh, and my favorite scene of theirs was definitely when they were using the macro binoculars to look at Rook, and then
and they're scared.
Yeah, well, Zeb is, and he's like, he's got creepy eyes. Like, oh my gosh, that's wonderful. That was so great.
I think that's the title of this episode. He's got creepy eyes in that Zeb voice. I love it. Yeah, I will say that. But like I said, I was just kind of meh about their storyline. Yeah, I think it's maybe because it was like a very generic response to it, but it's not surprising just because we've seen that response before.
Blowing stuff up is what they do. That's what those two are kind of their thing.
Yep. That's what they do. So I'm excited to see the next episode. I will say this definitely changes the dynamic of, you know, the team with Kanan gone. But we'll have to see what's in store for our crew from the Rebels. Anything else about the first two episodes, Evan? I know we've covered quite a bit of it.
I think we could probably go on for another hour, but I'm sure, you know what? I'll bet we're going to have some very evolved thoughts. Maybe that's not the right word for it, but our thoughts may be shaped differently looking back on these ones after the next couple. So I'll reserve any further commentary until we see the next ones.
All right. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with the rest of Rebels before we kind of reflect, if you will,
on
Kanan's death. There we go. We'll use the word reflect for this. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our page on Patreon at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Evan.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Somebody has to say it, don't they?
Always.